Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
You're listening to Chief Concerns.
Hear ye, hear ye, my fellow brethren and sistren of the Chief's Clan.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Please, just like, be cool for once. Thank ye.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Pew, 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 pew.
Oh, we're back. Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Charlie Carlin on the other side of the glass for you tonight. We're back on a Wednesday. We're back after the no-show last week. The show exists again. I had somebody wonder, like, hey, does Chief Concerns still exist? I was like, ah, yes, I think, hope. Yes, it is. It does. We're here. And I don't know if this show is currently existing in the most important or least important time for this show. It's hard to tell, because maybe this is the Chiefs-scented place where all of our Chief-obsessed fans across the city, country, globe, got some people downloading podcasts internationally. Maybe this is the time when this is the most vital, when all of us can come together and talk about Akeem Hunt getting cut. Or maybe this is the least important time because nothing is happening. And there are a couple of things that we talked about throughout the last week or so that we haven't talked about specifically on this show yet that we may crack open, talk about the offense a little bit. Also, we're going to hear from Seth Kaiser, who was on Almost Entirely Sports with me yesterday, and I pared it down a little bit. We have the conversation that he and I had about Chris Jones and the film review that Seth did on Chris Jones. And strangely enough, Seth was surprised by what he discovered. I don't think that happens terribly often to Seth, but it did on Chris Jones. So that's a tease. We'll talk to we'll hear from Seth here in a little bit. But we're in a dark, dark time in the NFL offseason because you can pick and choose some stories here or there around the league. And there are stories popping up around Chiefs topics because people nationally are starting to write about how they're buying the hype about Patrick Mahomes, which, like, is totally reasonable. And I am glad that that's, you know, happening a little bit, I guess. That's kind of fun. But every time one of those stories comes out, because I'm doing daily radio. Every time one of those stories about how some national writer says they're buying the hype on Pat Mahomes, I click through the article, read through it, and by the end, I've gotten literally nothing new, which is not shade for any national writer. I think the most recent one was a Ringer article. But there's been several publications that have done that. And I just go through it and I don't get anything new out of it because we've been here. And the things that are brought up to a national audience are things that we have been soaking up for weeks, months at this point, calendar year. But especially the more recent stories, like the things of the last few weeks, and we kind of latched on a few weeks ago to Mahomes and talking about how he and Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy and Mike Kafka all, you know, collaborate on the playbook and everything, and Seth has been doing all these great articles on The Athletic about what's beyond the arm. We've talked about that a ton. His platforms, his footwork, his release angle, the speed of his release, how he does in the pocket, how he does under pressure, his eye level. We've been talking about that. I've been talking about that since before the draft. That was one of the things that, you know, going into the draft, we talked a lot about him and then also a little bit about Deshaun Watson and everything. But Mahomes was always the guy that I was really infatuated with. And so we've been talking about that for more than a year, maybe a year and a half at this point. Not quite, I guess. And so whenever that gets brought up in some national article, I click it hoping for something new, and I never really get it because it's stuff that we've already heard. Anyway, that takes us to places like All right. Well, it takes us to the question of where do we get our discussion points from? And you'll see some things on ESPN.com, and those articles which about, you know, which veteran might not make the team. Daniel Sorensen. That's the answer. Like, I guess. I don't know. I saw that pop up a couple days ago. I didn't even click it, because for me, the answer is Daniel Sorensen. They go, how likely are the Chiefs to miss the playoff? It's reasonable. Like, the Chiefs or Chargers are going to win the division, and I could see it being either team. It really depends on the offense, how good the offense can actually be. Defense is going to be a little bit of a concern. But, yeah, I mean, whatever. It's possible, probable, maybe. 50-50. And that's what we're doing in June. It's one reason that, like, the NBA draft is tomorrow and the NHL draft is on Friday. Because we are in a vacuum as far as what's going on. So all that being said, I hope that you're here because you want to come up with something Chiefs to discuss in June. And I feel better talking about Chiefs in June after admitting that what we're doing is creating our own content until we're no longer creating our own content, in which case you'll know when that is. That's something that I think is reasonable. It's reasonable that, like, maybe we could be better at be discerning about what you're listening to that's news and what's created content. We do all of it here. We talk about the news of the day, and then we talk about what we think about it, and then we talk about our own stories. Like, the Chiefs cut Akeem Hunt today, his time in Kansas City officially, and then it's kind of the second time. This time it was cutting him off the PUP list, and we can ride that wave into talking about the Chiefs' backfield, and we will probably do that. But the one thing that I think is most interesting now, admitting that we're doing it with a little bit of kind of random speculation, is that the NFL supplemental draft is a thing we can discuss, right? We talked about this. I've talked about this on different shows. I'm sorry, I can't keep days straight anymore, much less three or four different shows. But the supplemental draft is especially interesting to me this year as a Chiefs fan, because the guys in the supplemental draft are defensive backs, and two of them are specifically corners. Adonis Alexander out of Virginia Tech is the guy. I think he was the first one to make waves for hopping into the supplemental draft. And all these guys have some issue. They were academically ineligible, or they wanted to leave school after the NFL draft happened. So all these guys are coming with some sort of baggage, and it's up to teams to figure out, you know, what's worth it, what kind of baggage is it, etc. The news is that the Chiefs are doing it. But so, Adonis Alexander out of Virginia Tech is the guy at the top of this list. I just pulled a beard hair out of the microphone cover here, so I'm going to go ahead and take it off because I don't need that. No offense, Stephen, but it was a black beard hair. And it's not that I think that Stephen has bad hygiene. But it's like finding a hair in your food. Like, that could be the cleanest person in the world, and I still don't want that hair that close to my mouth.
Fair.
Yeah, thank you. Ruling passed. That was just, it was also extremely distracting and just disorienting. So Adonis Alexander is the name that you should know coming out of this. Western Michigan cornerback Sam Beal and Mississippi defensive back Brandon Bryant. Those are the three guys that are in this supplemental draft. And the way the supplemental draft works is, like I said, it's for guys that are ineligible to return to school or for some reason are leaving college between the start of the NFL season and the previous NFL draft. So these guys probably should have just entered the draft, but they didn't. They wanted to go back for one more year, found out they couldn't, shouldn't, wouldn't, whatever. And now they go to the supplemental draft when teams can submit when they would be interested in taking these guys. Kind of like a silent auction, I guess you could sort of compare it to. They submit when they would be interested in taking these guys, and whoever gives the highest bid, essentially, and it's not actually a live bidding thing. Like, to my understanding, the Chiefs say, yeah, we'd spend our sixth on Adonis Alexander. And then if the Lions say they would spend their fifth, then the Lions get him, and no one else bids, and that's how it works. But so, that forfeits your pick in that round next year. And you can just basically draft a guy right now. You can use next year's pick to draft a guy right now. And if they clear, they just become a free agent, I suppose. But Tony Pauline of DraftAnalyst.com pointed out that the Chiefs were one of the teams interested in Adonis Alexander, and that they had already met with him, along with a number of other, another number of teams. Pauline pointed out that 26 teams went to see his workout, so it would be, I think, reasonable to assume that any team with a cornerback need would want to talk to the guy. Because if you talk to Adonis Alexander and you go, wow, there is no issue here. This is just a dude who couldn't keep his GPA up, which appears to be the thing that basically booted him out. Other stuff going on, but okay, that makes sense. Well, then you would be foolish to not continue down that path, especially with where the Chiefs are now. I have been pounding the table for, I mean, since they traded Marcus Peters, that the Chiefs need to do something to shore up their cornerback group. And they have passed and passed and passed and passed in a way that makes me believe that they actually are a little bit comfortable with the guys they have, which is kind of frustrating because I'm not thrilled with their crop of guys. And Steven Nelson, I could see a little optimism about. David Amerson, much less so. But you have these guys coming through the supplemental draft. I'm guessing that all three of these guys don't even get drafted. I would certainly be interested in sliding a seventh-round pick to make sure you get one of those guys. And specifically for Adonis Alexander, I'd be really interested in paying a reasonable price as far as supplemental draft guys go. Josh Gordon's the most high-profile one in recent years. I believe there was one guy drafted in a year after Josh Gordon that you would recognize his name. And I apologize, I don't have it right in front of me right now. Maybe we'll grab that whenever we come back. In fact, we will. We'll take a break whenever we come back. I'll tell you who that other person is. But the supplemental draft is really interesting little quirk of this dead time of the NFL season. And it seems like the Chiefs are at least doing their due diligence on a guy who, as far as I could tell, could really help their cornerback situation. All right, whenever we come back, I will let you know what else you may need to do on that supplemental drafting. But most importantly, we're going to hear from Seth Kaiser of The Athletic, our conversation delving into Chris Jones, his film review of him, and what he saw from Chris Jones last year. I promise you the results may surprise you. Also, he did a breakdown of a very important drive from Chiefs history, although I wasn't born when it happened. So that'll make some of you very happy and some of you feel very, very old coming up next.
Chief Concerns.
Pew, 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 pew.
Welcome back to Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I've mentioned it often enough, so you probably know by now, but I will say it again, that I have a show over on ESPN Kansas City called Almost Entirely Sports, and every Tuesday we have the distinct pleasure of having our friend Seth Kaiser on the show of The Athletic. He's doing fantastic work there all the time. We talked to him a little bit later about the Anatomy of the Play series, which is about a very important drive from the Chiefs' history. But the first thing that we talked to him about was his brand new film review on Chris Jones. And as you'll hear at the very beginning of our conversation, my favorite thing that he found in the Chris Jones film review was the fact that he found some things he wasn't expecting.
Chris Jones is a really interesting player to review.
Yeah.
In part because this wrecked some of you were wrong.
Yeah, this wrecked some of you. This is something that I thought was interesting in the piece. Like, you were wrong about what you thought you saw from Chris Jones.
Oh, absolutely. And this is a really common thing. This happens more often than people think. So often, you know, I watch the games for fun. I'm a fan first and foremost. And the moment that changes, mm-hmm. I'm out. Right. I'm not doing this anymore.
Right.
When it's not fun and I'm not a fan. So first and foremost, I watch the games for fun. I might tweet a little bit mm-hmm. and just kind of maybe give a few impressions. But I'm watching for fun. I'm watching with my kids. And so, like anyone else, I'm watching the ball. Mm-hmm. People who tell me that they are watching, like, the offensive and defensive line carefully during broadcast viewing, the word for those people are just liars. There's no way they're doing that. There's just no way. They might be watching a little bit.
Right.
But there's just no way you can enjoy the game while charting offensive linemen.
For sure.
There's no way.
It sounds like pain.
What happens to me so often, I walk away with just kind of general impressions. Maybe a few plays that the announcers break down. Oh, yeah, I noticed something.
Sure.
But I just walk away with general impressions. And then as the season goes on, you formulate your general impressions just like everyone else. And that's why I try really hard when people ask me questions. I always will lead with, if I haven't reviewed a guy, I always lead with, I haven't reviewed his snaps.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then I'll give my opinion. But my opinion, like anyone else's, if I'm basing it off one broadcast viewing, is probably wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, that just is how it works. Sure. And so as I review other players around a guy, you know, I'll see a little more of him, but I'm still not watching him and charting anything. It's still general impression.
Mm-hmm.
So then my opinion's a little more informed. And then when I really sit down and chart the guy and really grind through the tape, that's when I learned something. Well, with Jones, I was kind of with everyone else that kind of said, well, you know, he didn't become a bad player or even an average player, but he didn't really improve on his rookie year. He didn't make enough splash plays. He was inconsistent. He just kind of, you know, he plateaued, right? He was mm-hmm. stagnant. And I really thought that. And then when I reviewed his film, and like you're familiar with it, anyone who wants to, you know, check it out, it's up on The Athletic now. I charted win percentage, loss percentage, neutral plays, pressures, hits, sacks, effective double teams. That's a play where he forces a double team, not just to where there's an offensive lineman who's there,
mm-hmm.
but where he actually forces a double team, or the opposing team clearly schemed to double him. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has to do well against it. If you get plowed over by a double team, that's not an effective double team.
Right.
And then stuffs at the line of scrimmage, you know, within 2 yards by a singular effort stopping the run. So I chart those things. Well, here's what I found. His win percentage, which was pretty solid his rookie year, especially for a rookie, was actually up about 6 or 7%, which is a significant jump.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking from going from around 19% to around 25%. And his loss percentage dropped by, I want to say, 4 or 5 percentage points. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he actually did improve in terms of consistency a great deal. And I just missed it. I had no idea. And additionally, when you watch his film, the things that were a weakness for him last year, he really struggled against double teams last year.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of struggled at the point of attack. And as a run defender is where he had most of his troubles last year. He was good. He made splash plays. But he would struggle locating the ball. He would wash himself out of plays because of that. And all of these things were significantly improved. After watching him, I'd call him easily the Chiefs' best run defender up front last year.
Mm.
Easily the best. And he was the guy that teams were scheming most often to take out of the play. His rookie year, he had maybe a couple to three effective double teams a game.
Right.
This last year, he averaged anywhere between, it was like 9 or 10 a game. So teams were going after him, and he played very well despite that. I was really surprised because I didn't notice him much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I call this Justin Houston syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
When you are surrounded by a bunch of guys who are playing at a pretty meh level,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to pop out. Any offense can take away two guys,
right.
Houston and Jones,
right.
And no one else, from what I was seeing, was doing much of anything. So that's kind of the, you know, I hope you had time to take a couple laps around the building there.
Yeah, I figured out some things about high school, actually. It really, really messed me up. I'm going to try to fix those in retrospect.
You got some phone calls to make.
I do.
Apologies.
Yes, I do.
Beard's
cut my mic.
This is the hardest letter I've ever had to write. You know, you just always start with that.
Yeah,
and
it's
hope
good.
That they don't know each other and compare the letter.
Yeah, that's also that's something I have to worry about. Yeah, it's a good call.
Someone's going to tweet one copy of it, and they're going to realize it's all the same, and I just like, faxed it to 100 people.
Oh, sure, and then just, yeah, put a different name at the top. That makes sense.
Yeah, that does, actually.
I'm 100 people. That's rough, man. I don't know what you did to people in high school.
Yeah,
what,
no.
Did you homeschool?
Yeah, no, it's actually 100 copies of the letter that I'm sending to my mom.
Yeah. Hey, guys, sorry about this. Hey, well, I think we all could probably write letters like that to our mom, and they would probably be accurate.
Also probably true.
But back to Chris Jones. So what was really encouraging for me is I really thought going in that he was the same player his rookie and sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of players kind of go through sophomore slumps along the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
There's more tape on them. He's got a significant weakness in his pad level that teams can exploit. I figured, okay, that's all. Third year, that's when a lot of guys make the leap.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm even more convinced that we could see a big leap his third year because I was wrong. I was completely wrong. He improved in basically every aspect of his game. He didn't increase his number of pass rush moves. He still stuck with his bull rush, a push-pull, and a swim. That's pretty much it. But he was more effective with it. He's a good hand fighter. He's really great at getting a hold of linemen's wrists and controlling them. And he improved in that area as well. And as far as run defense goes, he really improved, which I know sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Because East run defense was really bad last year.
Yeah.
But if you watch, especially early in the season before Raglan kind of helped staunch some of the bleeding, there were plays where he would take on an effective double team, and the inside linebackers, whether it was because of lack of speed or lack of diagnosing ability, just didn't get there. And there's nothing a defensive lineman can do about that. And I think he, among the rest of the defensive linemen, he kind of took a beating that he didn't deserve from people because he was easily the best defensive lineman on the team. It wasn't even close.
Yeah, and so that's fascinating. And it also, like, it, all of it is also logical. Like, whenever you watch the tape and you come out with this result, like, my whole thing is, like, nodding quietly, going, oh, yeah, that makes sense. but like, it's the same. But the misconception at the front end of it also definitely exists. But it makes sense that having a year that I guess maybe looked to have a similar production to his rookie season to the naked eye, but against way more attention being devoted to him, is an improvement of a season, and also all these other numbers that you've tracked and everything, being an evolution of his game, makes a ton of sense. This is kind of forward-looking, and I don't know if you've got an answer ready to go for this, but what can the Chiefs and Bob Sutton be doing to maximize Chris Jones next year with all of these
right.
things evolving? And also, is the answer that they've already done it by trying to put more talent around him?
Well, obviously, having more talent around them is going to be a big deal. I wish they would have added another defensive lineman. Now, I like Xavier Williams. I think he's a guy who can play a little bit. Not much of a pass rusher, though. And that's my major concern. I think they'll be better against the run. I'm a believer in Nnadi. I think he can step in and play nose tackle decently. I think Williams, he looks real stout against the run, based on his tape from Arizona. So I think that'll help him
right. In
that respect. And then the secondary is going to be a concern. The secondary was just outside of Marcus Peters, was, for the most part, in a few games from Mitchell, was just bad last year.
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing that I've talked about with regards to Houston. I'm going to start on his film with you today.
Oh, nice.
I never quit.
Right, no, I've imagined. I'm glad that you're finding ways to fill your free time, yeah.
When you have a quarterback who can release the football in under 3 seconds, pass rush is almost irrelevant.
Sure.
You need more time. And so that's going to be – so the secondary improving, if it does, Barry being back should help. All the movements they made at corners. Someone phrased it real well to me. If they get the 2015 version of Amerson and the 2016 version of Nelson and the 2017 version of Fuller – they'll have a great corner trio.
Right, sure. Yeah, lovely.
But there's some ifs there. The only one I'm really sure about is Fuller.
Yeah.
So that'll help him. The pass rush I'm a little concerned about. I really wish they would have been a little more aggressive getting Mo Wilkerson. Seems like he was available. Now, my understanding is he turned down an offer from the Chiefs. Might have even been a matching offer because he wanted to go to Green Bay. That's fine. But it would have been nice to see them add someone. What I'm hoping, and this is just a hope against hope for me, one thing that I saw them do that I kind of liked last year was they put Jones on the edge on some obvious passing downs, and tackles just cannot handle him.
Right.
He's too strong. He just walks them backwards. It's kind of fun to watch. And so what would be interesting to me, when I reviewed Breland Speaks, I wasn't super thrilled, but I did think, and someone phrased this really well, he's almost a better pass rusher after contact. Once he's made contact with an offensive lineman, he's got this special kind of strength that he's able to get around them a little bit better. And so what would be interesting to me would be seeing them move Speaks to the inside while Jones rotates the outside, or just have Speaks next to him on the inside. I think Speaks could potentially be a better pass rusher than anyone else we had along the line last year on those nickel downs besides Jones. But that's mostly because the rest of the guys didn't really do anything. Bailey, as far as I can tell, I still need to review his film, see, there's that warning. As far as I can tell, Bailey just didn't, he kind of disappointed last year as a rusher. Yeah. And so I'm still very leery because while I think they've improved the overall talent on the defense, as far as pass rushers go, the only real almost sure thing upgrade you have is that Dee Ford is healthy. And, yes, he's a better pass rusher than Frank Zombo.
Right.
Everything else is conjecture. And so I think they need to bank on the secondary being more consistent and better overall, which we should give, you know, if they just give Jones, there was a bunch of snaps where if he'd had another half second or a second, he would have made some noise, mm-hmm. but, you know, the quarterback threw the ball and no one ever noticed. So we'll see what happens with him, but I'm really encouraged by his tape.
Moving him out to work on the tackle a little bit, I think, is really fascinating. And that's also one thing about having Garrett Gnaty and Xavier Williams on this team. I wonder if we'll ever, and this isn't for obvious passing downs, but I wonder if we'll ever see the two of them on the field at the same time in doing a sort of a 4-3 front that we don't see the Chiefs do very often, because they actually have two guys that you could put in the middle, and if it's a run play up the gut, like, you're actually going to survive and not just be brutalized like we've seen in recent memory. But so moving those guys around, I think, makes a lot of sense, which actually brings me to one of the other things I wanted to ask you about today. We had a story coming around the last, I don't know, last couple of weeks. It's been kicked around, but it just kind of came back to mind now. Whether the Chiefs are apparently willing to move their linebackers around a little bit this year. And I feel like maybe it's a smidgen, and you'll probably see this with Houston. I feel like it might be a tiny smidge overblown. Like, I feel like we've seen Houston be moved around a little bit here and there, but it sounds like they're willing to go to a much more flexible defense. And I'm curious what you think about the idea of moving Justin Houston to the lesser of the two tackles, or moving Dee Ford to where he has a better matchup, et cetera. How you feel about how all that could play out?
I feel fine about that. One game they did it, and I remember talking about the Dee Ford film review.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Peters was just brutalizing Ford.
Yeah.
It was ugly.
Yep.
And so they switched them. Now, I don't know if that was the reasoning, but then Lane Johnson proceeded to brutalize Ford.
Uh-huh.
So,
right.
I mean, those guys are just good tackles. It's just tough.
Also, weirdly, I was going to actually point this out, and then I forgot. Chris Jones' greatest win percentage game was against the Eagles.
Yeah, I know.
Kind of crazy. Yeah, it's kind of 35% of his snaps.
He was going up against Brooks, who was a really good guard some of the time, and he really acquitted himself well.
Yeah.
But their other guard just could not hang with him. I mean, it was really bad. Like, I think a couple of his sacks were against that guy. It was just, he just couldn't. He wasn't strong enough. He wasn't quick enough. It was one of those physical mismatch situations
mm-hmm.
that it was tough. Mm-hmm. And so, but he actually had a few good snaps from the edge that game too. He's just a good player.
Yeah.
But anyway, as far as moving the guys around, Houston, as far as I can tell, it doesn't matter what side you put him on.
Mm-hmm.
He seems equally proficient rushing the passer. He looks equally comfortable. He looks fine. We know Ford is more comfortable from the right side of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we've seen it. And so I think, and I could be wrong, I think some of this might be an excuse just to let Ford play on the side he's more comfortable with more often.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we live in a world now where the distinction between left tackle and right tackle isn't quite what it used to be.
For sure.
And so, you know, you're not necessarily, oh, no, now you put Houston against the very best tackle on the team. It might not be that same issue.
It's not that way for the Chiefs. That's not true for the Chiefs.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. Schwartz is a significantly better player than Fisher.
Yeah.
And so I would say I think it's a good idea. I don't think it's something you can completely build your defense around. You need your base set.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the idea of moving Houston around. I like the idea of moving Houston around to the interior.
Yes.
He had some really great rushes. Like, one thing that when Sutton sent Jones to the edge, mm-hmm. quite often he flipped him with Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guards, at least in the limited snaps that's available, and again, I'm starting the review now, so we'll see how often it actually was, a lot of guards can't handle Houston one-on-one. He's just too fast. And he's unlike a lot of edge rushers, he's strong enough to move them.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really gives them problems. And I like the idea of moving him around and not letting teams game plan for him. At least to me, it's indicative of the idea of centering the defense around his talent.
Mm.
Because I would like to see them do that more, mm-hmm. using him as a weapon, rather than what I felt like they used him as last year was glue. They kept having, or you know, whatever you want to call it, they kept having leaks everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kept trying to patch things up with Houston.
Yeah.
Whereas I would really love to see them use him as a weapon rather than glue.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. That makes a ton of sense. And I wonder if that would have, it probably, I guess, wouldn't have been the case if Eric Berry was healthy, because that's, I feel like that's how Eric Berry's been used sometimes to the best, to the best way possible. Like, Eric Berry's just covering Rob Gronkowski now, and oh my goodness, it's working. Like, but that's what Eric Berry does. I'd rather see Justin Houston use as a weapon. I think that's a good call.
Right. Yeah, Berry is more versatile in a certain sense.
Mm-hmm.
Houston is incredibly versatile as a front seven guy.
Mm-hmm.
You can use him all over. The problem is the opportunity cost. There you go, your economic term
good
for the day.
I like that.
The opportunity cost of using Houston in any way other than rushing the passer,
mm-hmm.
it hurts you more
yes.
than shifting Berry from deep zone to robber.
Right.
Or to slot. Yep. Because all of those carry roughly equivalent importance
mm-hmm.
depending on the player. Whereas you go from Houston rushing the passer to Houston dropping back in coverage or playing spy, you've made a huge downturn mm-hmm. in level of importance of his job. And so I really would love to see him used more like a Khalil Mack or a Von Miller, which, hey, there's the quarterback, every play go nuts, just get crazy. And hopefully, with Berry returning and with them adding, they've added a few kind of Swiss Army knife type pieces with guys like Daniel and stuff. I'm hoping that will allow Houston to be more laser focused on one thing.
The only other thing on that I think is interesting there is that, you know, you want Houston to be focused on the one job, which you can open up by making him more flexible where he can go. That, I think, is fantastic. Also, I like the idea of it doing a similar thing for Breland Speaks, for Tano Pastanier, to a lesser extent to D Ford, because D Ford seems like he's kind of more like you're not putting D Ford in a place where they might even run the ball close to him. But it gives you kind of an excuse to plug in those other guys, Speaks and Pastanier, to places where they seem more likely to succeed.
Right.
If that makes sense.
I would agree with that completely. And, you know, Pastanier is one that I'm interested in. We always tend to take guys who have relatively quiet rookie years,
mm-hmm.
and then we just discard them. We're like, they probably won't be that good.
Right.
I mean, even with Houston, you know, he didn't start until halfway through, which was a horrible mistake by the coaching staff, but I won't even get into that. And he ended up with, like, 7 sacks or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, 3 of them were against the Bears or something. And I just remember people saying, well, you know, he was kind of disappointing. And then, of course, he had a really good 2013 mm-hmm. and a monster 2014. And people kind of like, oh, wait, he is great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people tend to, because they've been hurt before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Counting on player development has hurt us all. But there are certain situations, like with Pastanier, I think there are reasons to believe that he could take a step forward. It sounds like the coaches are encouraged. So that he would be a guy to watch, too. He's kind of the dark horse. One thing I like about having Ford around is that Pastanier or Speaks will at least have to be decent pass rushers to beat him out.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can pass rush at a similar level of production and not be a sieve against the run, then that's an upgrade.
Yeah, and being hurt by one player and then forever trying to stay out of the game is actually what my entire sophomore year of college journal is about.
Yeah, to bring it all back.
So we've come full circle. Seth, can you let everybody know what else you've got on The Athletic real quick? The Kareem Hunt touchdown, the Mile High Magic piece you wrote.
Yes, so last week I broke down the long Kareem Hunt touchdown against the Patriots. I have a weekly article that's called Anatomy of a Play that drops every Monday, where I break down a single play really in depth. And I'm always looking, you know, on Twitter or wherever you want to send it for suggestions. I have a ball with that. This last Monday, I actually wrote, and it dropped yesterday,
mm-hmm.
a piece on the 1994 Montana Magic at Mile High. And every Chiefs fan over 30 is like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Josh, were you – I'm not even trying to bust
nope.
Josh. Were you alive?
I was not. Hold on. Actually, was this January 94 or is this December? Well, actually, it's not going to matter, I don't think.
Was it in January? I want to say September. I can't even remember off the
top
of my
head. If it was September 94, then I was about a month from my debut.
It was a Monday
months.
Night football game where Montana forever took the title of most clutch 2-minute quarterback away from John Elway. And the Chiefs, everyone knows, but I mean, it was the most fun I've had writing an article, I think maybe ever. because the Chiefs, they get the ball back. Elway had last-minute heroics. The Chiefs get the ball back with like a minute 20 left with two timeouts, down four. They're at Mile High, and Montana proceeds to just dissect them. Mm-hmm. And it ended with a touchdown on the right side of the end zone to Willie Davis, which is just a perfect throw and a perfect catch. And so I broke down, actually, the entire drive. Now, it's not on all 22, so I couldn't get as detailed as I wanted, but I kind of just pointed out a few things that I thought maybe people might have missed. And it's a great trip down memory lane for people my age or older, because you've got Kimball Anders making a play, you got Marcus Allen making a play. You get to watch one particular run play rely on a young guard by the name of Will Shields.
Mm-hmm. Heard of him.
And, I mean, you just watch him freeze the defender. It's just, it's a lot of fun. And you also get to see a couple of shots of Denver players just seeing that they are on the wrong side of history and the inevitability of it all. It's just, it's a lot of fun. That was one of my favorite articles, right? So that's up there now, too. Now I'm starting the Justin Houston review. And as always, my goal with every piece that I write at The Athletic is to try to provide people with something that you can't find anywhere else and mm-hmm. get a little more in-depth. And so that's the goal from here on out. And I'm having a ball, man. I don't sleep enough, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, you're gonna die of sleep deprivation.
Yeah, at some point. But, I mean, no one lives forever, Josh.
That's true. You can sleep when you're dead, I guess.
Exactly.
I'm seeing October 17th, 1994. This was 2 months, let's see, BJB, as we say around here, before Josh Briscoe.
Yes. And so, again, it obviously doesn't carry the same weight for you. But no. That was the night I became a Chiefs fan.
There we go.
Because it was just such an incredible moment. And it sounds crazy if you didn't live through it because it was just a regular season game. But the gravity of the moment, I mean, like Dan Dierdorf said, like, you know, take me out, God, I've seen everything. You know what I mean? It was like, he really said that. And, like, you saw Montana's wife and daughter were just freaking out, hugging each other. It was this huge thing because before that, people weren't sure if Montana had kind of lost it.
Mm-hmm.
He did, you know, and it was just, it was such a huge moment. And it was just, it made, there's so many people that have responded already that have said, yeah, this is, I remember where I was. I remember what I was doing. Because it was just this moment that created an entire generation of Chiefs fans.
I remember where I was, but it was in my mother's womb.
So, yeah, you've heard would be more accurate.
Yes.
Probably don't remember.
No, I that's true. That's a good point. I know where I was. I know where I was.
Yeah,
I was
you have reliable information. As
yes.
To what you were at that point.
That's true.
Yeah, but no, I'll never forget. I was sitting in my living room watching the game with my dad and my sisters and my mom. And I'll just never forget it. It was just the coolest thing. I'll never forget when the Chiefs went down, and I was just like, oh, they're going to lose. My dad looking at me and saying, just hang on a second, son. That's Joe Montana. You don't know what that means, but just watch. And he turned out to be prophetic.
I think you could legally sue Joe Montana for false advertising because that made you a Chiefs fan, and then look at what they gave you after that. Like,
oh, it's been terrible, but you know what? Been pretty all right too, you know. Like I always tell people, it's a good week to be a Chiefs fan, Josh.
Right, that's true. Seth, it's a fun piece that you put together that just reminds me of how much of an old decrepit man you are, with all of your jobs and never sleeping. That I think you have more energy than I do, even though you also have apparently like 40 more years on me than I have.
I'm quite old. Don't ever forget that.
I was gonna say old and I guess we could say old and wise, but like that I don't. I mean,
no, I'll stick with old. It's okay.
Old is.
I don't want to lie to people. It's fine. I'm just old.
Seth, always good to talk to you, and I can say once again, we will talk to you next week.
I'm excited for it. I can't wait.
That's the very old Seth Kaiser. He's at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. You can read all of his stuff and should be reading all of his stuff on The Athletic. It's simply worth it. And the coverage of The Athletic continues to expand to different markets and different depths. But in Kansas City, coverage continues to grow and be fantastic, even in this like deathly slow time. That's when you write about Joe Montana. Whenever you're writing about the Chiefs, it's the time to do it. It gives you something to read about and talk about and to look back on either the good old days or the pre-birth days. Seth Kaiser's always an absolute treat. And if you want to hear that full conversation, yes, you heard like a 20-minute conversation and there was still more before that. You can go listen to the podcast
Go listen to Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcast. You'll see it. Seth Kaiser's name is in the title of the hour. You can hear the whole thing. But right now, you're listening to Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810. Whenever we come back, we'll talk about a couple other little stories around. Also, a very good stat about a former Chief that popped up on Twitter today that will always get someone angry. That just will always happen. The simple name of the man will bring ire and fury. Not fire and fury, ire and fury. Also fire and fury, I suppose, in the Twitter mentions. Talk about a few of those things. Also, maybe a little bit about Akeem Hunt, who just got cut by the Chiefs again. But, I mean, listen, what a June story that is. We've got something to talk about, though, as we always will here on Chief Concerns.
Chief Concerns.
Pew, 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 pew.
Welcome back on the Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe, Charlie Carlin's keeping us on the air. And as I've mentioned time and time again, we're in a bad place in the calendar for an NFL season. The Chiefs did make a small roster move, as we mentioned earlier, releasing Akeem Hunt, and that lightens a little bit the Chiefs' very interesting depth chart in the backfield. We've also heard very much about Kareem Hunt's bad offseason. So this just gives us a little bit of clarity there. Just one guy, not necessarily clarity because you're still shuffling around four guys in that backfield right now. All of them that have arguments to be made for why they are or aren't going to make the team, why they are or aren't terribly interesting, where they do or don't fit on the roster and everything. But one guy, you know, one guy out of the rotation. And the guys at the top, we remember the thing with Spencer Ware is basically if he's healthy, he's good. And he would be a nice guy to have as a change of pace around Kareem Hunt. Charkhandrick West seems like right now one of the guys that you could make the best argument that he'll probably be on his way out by the end of training camp, but I also think he very much can perform his way onto the roster and hold down his spot. But Kerwin Williams is a cheaper alternative to Charkhandrick West, who I think can do a lot of the same things, the former Arizona Cardinals running back. And Darrell Williams is the guy from LSU who I find to be fabulously interesting because he spent the last two seasons with no shame behind Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis, two of the premier running backs in college football over the last two seasons. So, you know, Fournette went very, very, very high, top five in the draft to the Jags 2 years ago, and Geis, I don't remember where Geis went, but he went pretty high this year. Okay, fine, I'm going to Google it. You've talked me into it. I can't remember who took Darius Geis. I remembered more running backs last year because I was caring about where Kareem Hunt was going. He was drafted by the Washington racial slurs. So Geis is in Washington. And again, just a tremendous running back, as was Leonard Fournette the year before. So the Chiefs now have the guy that just couldn't beat out two of the best running backs in college football over the last two seasons. Geis went in the second round this year. I don't want to say a hunch because I don't have a hunch means nothing. But I could definitely see the path to a running back room this year that includes Kareem Hunt and Darrell Williams. And then one other guy. The problem is, who do you let go? Charkhandrick West and Kerwin Williams, I don't see in a situation where those are the two guys that are behind Kareem Hunt. Do you try to sneak one of those guys to something like the IR or maybe a practice squad for Darrell Williams? I think he would probably be the only one eligible for that. Don't quote me on that, but I think the other guys would not be eligible to be on the practice squad. But I find that interesting. The other guy that we've talked about briefly in the past as far as kind of like guys to keep an eye on with the depth chart, and there's no news on this regard yet, but the running back conversation made me think about this quarterback conversation. Patrick Mahomes is your starter. Chad Henne is your backup. Those two things are as certain as any two things in the NFL. But Matt McGloin was the third guy the Chiefs brought in, and then they brought in Chase Litton after the draft as an undrafted free agent, the quarterback out of Marshall. I hope I'm right on Marshall. It feels like, yeah, nailed it, got it in one. And I could see him being the third guy. I think Andy Reid would like to have that guy be, that third quarterback, be someone with a high ceiling and some tools that he could develop. And I feel like we all pretty much know what Matt McGloin is. So cutting Akeem Hunt today made me think about the rest of the backfield. Something to keep an eye on whenever training camp gets here in like what feels like 1,000 years. But this is what we will be doing for the rest of June. Talking about Chase Litton and Matt McGloin and Damian Williams. Kerwin Williams, Darrell Williams. Wait a second, Damian Williams. Who the hell's Damian Williams? I don't even see his name on the depth chart. Oklahoma. I've heard this name before. He was in Miami. When did he get here? God, I love a good running back battle in June. Talk to you next week. Bye, Mom.
Chief Concerns.